We hit the bar and dropped into a canyon of water, the bow of the boat pointing up the hissing crest of the wave going before us, and the rear down in the trough in the shadow of the wave looming behind us, and everybody in the back hanging on the rail and looking from that mountain that chased behind to the streaming black rocks of the jetty 40 feet to the left, to George at the wheel. He stood there like a mast. He kept turning his head from the front to the back, gunning the throttle, easing off, gunning again, holding us steady, riding the uphill slant of that wave in front. He told us before we started the run that if we went over the crest in front, we'd surfboard out of control as soon as the prop and rudder broke water, and if we slowed down to where that wave behind caught up, it would break over the stern and dump 10 tons of water into the boat. Nobody joked or said anything funny about the way he kept turning his head back and forth like it was mounted up there on a swivel. Inside the mooring, the water calmed to a choppy surface again, and at our dock by the bait shop, we could see the captain waiting with 2 cops at the water's edge. All the loafers were gathered behind them. George headed at them full throttle, booming down on them till the captain went to waving and yelling and the cops headed up the steps with the loafers. Just before the prow of the boat tore out the whole dock, George swung the wheel, threw the prop into reverse, and with a powerful roar, snuggled the boat in against the rubber tires like he was easing it into bed. We were already out tying up by the time our wake caught up. It pitched all the boats around and slopped over the dock and white-capped around the docks like we'd brought the sea home with us. The captain and the cops and the loafers came tromping back down the steps to us. The doctor carried the fight to them by first off telling the cops they didn't have any jurisdiction over us, as we were a legal government-sponsored expedition, and if there was anyone to take the matter up with, it would have to be a federal agency. Also, there might be some investigation into the number of life jackets that the boat held if the captain really planned to make trouble. Wasn't there supposed to be a life jacket for every man on board, according to the law? When the captain didn't say anything, the cops took some names and left, mumbling and confused, and as soon as they were off the pier, McMurphy and the captain went to arguing and shoving each other around. McMurphy was drunk enough he was still trying to rock with the roll of the boat, and he slipped on the wet wood and fell in the ocean twice before he got his footing sufficient to hit the captain, one up alongside of his bald head, and settle the fuss. Everybody felt better that that was out of the way, and the captain and McMurphy both went to the bait shop to get more beer while the rest of us worked at hauling our fish out of the hold. The loafers stood on that upper dock watching and smoking pipes they'd carved themselves. We were waiting for them to say something about the girl again, hoping for it to tell the truth, but when one of them finally did say something, it wasn't about the girl, but about our fish being the biggest halibut he'd ever seen brought in on the Oregon coast. All the rest nodded that that was sure the truth. They came edging down to look it over. They asked George where he learned to dock a boat that way, and we found out George had not just run fishing boats, but he'd also been captain of a PT boat in the Pacific and got the Navy Cross.